You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Brittany, for those that haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name is Brittany Beck, and I am the owner of Highwire HR Consulting. So I am a boutique consulting firm, and I dedicate my services to independent pharmacies across the U.S. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that pharmacy owners are facing with their employees, specifically around those difficult employees and the decisions that they have to make. You know, attendance issues, personality issues can be a factor. Or am I able to separate this employee to terminate them? What's going to happen if I do? Or maybe just the fear of not addressing issues because they're going to quit on you.
Brittany, you mentioned attendance. I never think much of attendance because as much as I don't like having difficult conversations, that's not a terribly difficult one for me because it's quite black and white. You didn't show up. This is the second time, a fine person, but people who aren't at the pharmacy can't help me. You're fired. But that's a problem, I take it.
Yes, it is a problem. In one sense, we have a lot of pharmacies today are nervous to let go of people because they find it hard to get new people. So the recruitment issue is impacting their ability or their decision to manage people in how they normally would if they weren't nervous about losing staff and not finding new ones. And so in some cases, I think that employees are taking advantage of that. They know that you don't want to let them go because the talent out there seems to be scarce. And so they're trying to see what they can get away with, right? And then in other cases, it's that you just simply haven't laid down the rules around attendance or consistently managed it. And so without that consistency, people, they don't know what the rules are. So they're going to do what they think they can do. So I think there's a combination there.
I had a tech years ago, and we never seemed to have any people in our pharmacy calling in sick. You just didn't do it. Probably more people should have, now that you think of all the spread of stuff. But back in the day, nobody did. Then this one technician I had, she called in sick one time. And I was just like, I'm not going to show up. I've got the sniffles kind of thing. And that probably happened one or two more times. And it just went like wildfire through the team. I think it was because nobody wanted to be that person because it makes everybody else's job tougher. Then as soon as this one cog got out of the system, everybody else is having a tough situation. And they're like, well, screw it. Next time I'm sick, I'm going to make others have the tough situation, or at least not care. And boy, was that like a wildfire through the store.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm sure it was. And it puts employers in a really tough situation because we have a duty, and legally we're required to provide a healthy and a safe workplace. And so part of that is when somebody comes in sick and they get everybody else sick, we're not really promoting a healthy workplace. And so it's tough because there's a difference between I have the sniffles and it's seasonal allergies and I have, you know, something that's I'm going to pass to all of my colleagues. And then with COVID, which I've really come to hate that word, but that it really changed a lot in the employment landscape from recruitment and retention and attendance. Now, people are very quick to call out when they're not feeling well. That just put a whole new way of doing things for employees. And so it's hard because you don't want to reprimand someone for calling in because they didn't want to get other people sick. And at the same time, it's like, well, how do I know that you're really sick and you're not just using that as an excuse? So I think attendance has become more of an issue after the pandemic than it was before?
There was a lot of permissions granted to people with COVID. So it was, I'm going to change my hairdresser because I didn't like her anyways, but now I've been gone for 6 months. So she's probably figured I did something else. It wasn't bashing her cutting skills.
Sure.
Or I'm not going to go to the same church anymore because of this reason or that reason. And they won't really notice because maybe they think I changed gears kind of thing. I think I'm noticing that too around holidays. And I did that on purpose at our store. I'm like, screw it. I'm going to take more days off. We went down Monday through Friday and we do a half day for this now and all that kind of stuff. But I think there's more permission for that now. And I think it's just these companies said, look, we got by for 2 months without me doing this or that. So what's 2 days around the 4th of July or something like that? But just like my technician who kind of got permission, I think it's the same thing with people calling in sick. It's like, look, I wasn't fired after 3 months of this. So what are they going to do now?
That time definitely put into perspective for employees what they can do in the sense of, I can do this job from home, or I do like working from home, or you know what? I really missed out on a lot of family time. I want to be in a job that gives that back to me. So the time during that pandemic when we were shutting down and when employees were working from home or their schedules were completely changing because of it, or when they were not allowed to come into work when they didn't feel well, things like that. I mean, it really changed how employees view their jobs and how they view they're taking back control of their own work-life balance. They've always expected that the employer maintains that for them. That is a benefit that an employer can provide, is that work-life balance. Well, where it's not existing, employees are taking it for themselves. And in some cases, and this is part of the recruitment issue, is and the retention issue as well, is that they're more comfortable to change jobs when they don't like the atmosphere, when they don't see opportunities for them to grow and develop. And some of them have just changed careers and industries altogether because they've seen the light of, I'm going to pursue my dreams and this is what I want to do and I'm not doing what I want to do right now.
It's looking at their own life and giving themselves permission to do those kind of things with maybe not being too hard on themselves.
Oh yeah, for sure.
If COVID's going to do this to our balance, what can I do for our balance?
Now that we're post-COVID, they're now taking control of their work-life balance because during COVID, they saw what was possible that they weren't getting. So many companies outside of pharmacy, but so many companies, their employees went remote to work remotely and they never did before, right? And so it was eye-opening of, wow, this job can be done remotely. Why am I going to go back into the office? I think that's the same in the cases of two. Well, we got away with three people in the store during this time. So certainly you can do it again if I'm not feeling well.
You had the bosses that used the threats like, hey, guys, if everybody's not here by 9 o'clock, I don't care as the boss. I'm a generous boss, but we don't want the customers waiting on the phone or someone standing in line outside in the morning waiting to get helped. So you all have to be here on time. And people are saying, all right, we were closed for 3 months. So what's 5 minutes? I'm going to be a little bit late.
Well, and to top that off is, well, what happens when I'm not? Because a lot of people make empty threats. And one thing that I try to tell my clients a lot is, don't make threats you'll regret or promises you can't keep, because that's going to come back to bite you. So if you're not going to follow up on saying, hey, if you're late again, this is going to happen. If that's not going to happen, don't say it. Don't say it. You're ruining your credibility. And it's just giving permission to everyone else to do the same thing. I'm a big believer in policies. That might be just, I have a very analytical mind. I love the law. But I believe that policies bring structure to an organization and allow your leaders to know exactly what to do, when to do it, and to be consistent with everyone so that there can't be this, well, you're treating so-and-so better than you're treating me, or you didn't do this to Alice when she called in 3 times last week, but now you're doing it to me when I did. So I think first and foremost is, do you even have a policy that guides attendance? And does that policy stipulate what happens when? You know, do you have any kind of point system or an occurrence system so that employees know this is exactly what's going to happen when I reach this point? So there has to be some flexibility, right? We're dealing with humans. And so although a lot of people like to see rules and policies as black and white, there is a lot of gray. There has to be, because these are people. And people have families and they have lives outside of work. And unfortunately, a lot of business owners, they want their employees to look at their business the same as they do, right? It's my baby. So I'm going to be here 24/7 and this is all I care about. Well, the hard truth is it's not theirs. Your business is not their baby. They have their own babies. And that's okay. It has to be okay. There has to be flexibility. There has to be balance in understanding and being empathetic about what truly is going on with their life. But here we go back to that balance pull, right? I need to balance the needs of my business with the needs of my employees. And so how do I do that? That's, again, that's where these policies in place and consistently enforcing them is going to help the most in this area, especially if you've never done it before.
There's this guy I like online. His name is Scott Galloway of Prophet, P-R-O-P-H-E-T. It's a consulting firm out in California. Actually, my brother worked there years past. But he said, any company that calls their employees heroes, he said they're not paying enough. They're not paying enough. If they got to like butter up their employees, like our employees are heroes. It's like, all right, if it truly is a hero, but I mean, they're not heroes. Pay them more. And you don't have to use that word so much. That was his thought. What's interesting to me, Brittany, is bosses are not usually lax on the policy because they like the person more. It's usually because they don't like them as much. Like if a lady's dating, kind of like in the dating field, the person who she likes better, she's going to be warmer to them. And parents might choose to do a little side favor for one of the kids who hasn't been crying all afternoon. The problem in the pharmacy, though, is a lot of times, like you said, why didn't you do this to Alice? A lot of times it's because the boss hates talking to Alice and they're a pain in the ass and they're passive aggressive and all that kind of stuff. So it's a weird thing. So when someone comes to you and says, how come Alice can do this? You think it would be the opposite because that would be a favorite employee, the non-Alice person. But Alice gets off just because nobody wants to deal with her.
Yeah, no, you're right. And there's some leaders who they don't like confrontation at all. And they don't like conflict. And at some point, it's like, well, you're managing people, so it's going to come. Like, you have to get over that. And you have to be able to manage these instances. And I think that comes back to finding the root cause of, well, why are you scared of Alice? What has happened? Or what are you scared is going to be the result of you talking to her? And then from there, you can work through, okay, well, let's try this approach, right? Because what you're doing is you're putting the company at high risk of discrimination charges because you're not treating employees equitably.
I had an employee that was in my extended family. And the people that knew of our situation at the pharmacy, they were like, Mike, thanks for working things out with this person because I can see how it wouldn't always be the easiest to manage this person. Well, time goes on and I'm like, this isn't going to work. But you think about the ramifications of dealing with somebody, it's a deeper level. And in this case, for some reason, I had an inkling that if we let this person go, it was going to be sort of a domino effect through this extended family of ours. And sure enough, this person we let go, the same people thanking us for having her a part of this, knowing that she was probably not quite up to par, just stop talking to me and things like that. And it's like, that is okay. I wouldn't change it for the world, but there is ramification for firing people. And that's part of being an owner and part of a boss and knowing you have to go through those ramifications, but pretending they're not there is not good. It's just knowing they're going to happen, but still going through with things.
Yeah. I mean, in some cases, if your fear is that, well, Alice is going to quit if I confront her and I can't have that. Well, okay. What's the difference between Alice quitting, you knowing she's not going to be around so you can plan accordingly, and Alice not quitting and never coming into work, and you don't have to, you don't have the ability to plan around that? The difference is there's still nobody there. Like, she's still not there, right? So that's no different. The difference is I now know what's happening. I can plan accordingly, and I can find someone else who does want to work and who does want to be here. So again, it's what's the fear here? What's holding you back? Yeah, terminations, they come with risk. And if you're not doing them properly, they can come with great risk, right? Because there's a lot of compliance that goes alongside that, which again is why having your processes in place and following them, they're going to help you not only be able to execute what you need to do in those employment decisions, but help back you up for doing them.
I think sometimes in firing, not only do these owners say that they don't want the chance of someone quitting because they have to replace that, I think sometimes they're afraid of a mutiny. It's like, Julie got fired and Susie and Janice and Bob are all there at night and they've all been talking, and all of a sudden you have four people gone instead of one. I think the balance of that, though, is most times when I've gotten rid of somebody, I've been thanked by the employees who you think they were on that mutinous team. A lot of times I've just been thanked by them because they're doing their best to be part of the team, and they're not just going to put a big sign of what this person's doing, but they're thankful when that person's gone.
I hear that often is with being afraid that the person's going to quit. It is very rare that somebody just quits on the spot. You're talking about their livelihood. You're talking about income. Somebody is not going to just throw that away right then and there. So if somebody does quit after they've been reprimanded, they were already going to quit. This was just their excuse to do it sooner, and they already have something lined up. So your other employees, they're not going to just up and quit because they see this happen. In fact, if they were thinking of quitting, it was probably because of Alice's behavior and they just had
absolutely
enough of it. And so because you've taken care of that now, they're like, oh, okay, good. I don't need to move on.
And I've always said that I'll know somebody and one of the couples is just an animal with people, just a terrible person with others. And you say, well, there must be something that works for them. Quite often not, though. If you follow up with that relationship, quite often down the road, they're divorced. Because if you're that kind of person, you can't segment in enough. We actually had a delivery driver, and I could not get this person to shut her mouth. I mean, you think I talk a lot. I mean, she would not shut her mouth, and most of it was complaints, and not complaints about us, just what she has to do the afternoon, and she was just a real go-getter.
Yeah.
When we fired her, we thought that some of the delivery customers might be a little upset because they would talk to her and so on. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, it's a pain in the ass for me to talk to her. Not because I'm afraid. I just didn't feel like doing it. She just wouldn't shut up. And I actually got two thank you notes from customers that I thought were dependent on her. The one of them said, now I can come out from hiding.
Yeah.
And one of them was like something else, kind of bad mouth. And I wasn't trying to have them bad mouth, but they came out and offered it. You don't change. If you're that kind of a person, if you're passive aggressive or this or that with your staff, it's going to go to the customer. It's a cancer through it all.
Oh, for sure. Your employees are a reflection of you, of the company. They're the ones who are really out there more than the owner is in a lot of cases. And so if you're allowing these issues to go on, I mean, attendance aside, any other kind of issues with employees, it's going to be reflected. You're not the only one experiencing those issues. They're happening elsewhere in their life. And so if that doesn't motivate you to make sure that you're managing your employees, is that, hey, they're reflecting on your business. You can have whatever kind of branding awareness out there you want, but at the end of the day, it's how your employees are treating your customers and how they're interacting with each other and what's being said in the community that's really what your brand is. So that should motivate you to want to manage these rule breakers or these difficult employees and either get them on the right track or get them out of your pharmacy.
You talked about being, you didn't use this word, but precise in here's what policies were broken, this and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I had this guy work for me a long time ago, and I would say some witty remark, at least by my definition, it was witty. It deserved a chuckle, especially if I was paying these people. It deserved a little chuckle. And this guy would always say a further witty comment that I didn't think was very witty, but he would say a further witty comment, and then he'd wipe his eye like he was crying at himself, and he said, oh, I kill myself, all this kind of stuff. I'm like, nah, not really. I gave you a setup, if anything. I hated that, but that's not something you can put into a procedure. Sometimes there's just people that you just sour on their personality.
Yeah.
You got to deal with those people too.
Yeah, you do. And you want to be careful too to kind of separate out what's job related, right? What's messing up our environment professionally? And what is just someone's personality that isn't negatively impacting anything? So that's difficult. Again, like I said, we hire people and people are different. Everyone is different. We have our quirks and we have our different backgrounds and experiences, but that's what makes it great to have a team because you can draw off of everyone's quirks and experiences and go a lot further than you can on your own.
That's interesting. I know if he was in my position, he was saying, I had this boss and he always thought he was so damn funny and this and that. It's quirks.
He was probably trying to relate to you.
I don't think he thought that because I would say something like, boy, I think the Tigers are going to win the pennant this year, something like that. And he'd say, yes and no. And I thought, oh, okay, it's not a given fact that Tigers are going to win. I don't follow baseball, but it was just something to say when you're in the business. So then I thought, that's interesting, yes or no. So then I would say something a little bit more definitive, like, boy, it's a warm one out today. You'd be like 85. Yes and no. I'm like, wait a minute. Yes and no.
It's a matter of perspective.
Then I would test them. I'm like, boy, that sky is way up there and the earth is below our feet. Yes and no.
Oh, he was still messing with you.
He wasn't messing with me. I eventually got rid of him. Here's what the listeners will say. Mike, you need to focus more on the goal. You need to focus more on the march you're making towards this kind of thing. I understand that. You look at things that bug you maybe when you don't have a clear direction and all that, but it still bugged the hell out of me.
Yeah. I mean, there are people, they definitely rub you the wrong way. But again, at the end of the day, when you're the business owner or you're the leader, because of the risks that you have on the side of compliance, you have to be able to put those aside and know what is work-related, what's job-related, and what isn't.
What do you mean compliance there, Brittany? You have to watch yourself for complying to the laws?
Yeah, for employment laws, labor laws, we all have them. And even if you have one employee, there's like 20 federal labor laws that apply to you. And I guarantee you that the average business owner doesn't know one of the labor laws that apply to them. And that's why people like me exist, to help, right? To know those laws and to help you abide by them. But you've got your typical protected classes, discrimination, harassment. Every state except for Montana is at will. But a lot of times we use that at will incorrectly, because as Americans, we still have a constitutional right to earn a living. And so we are subject to due process. And what that means is that although, yes, you can terminate someone for any reason or no reason, it's as long as that reason is not illegal in nature. Well, we have the duty to give employees due process, which means that they have to be provided the opportunity to understand where they're going wrong, how they need to make it right within a reasonable time, and for them to know the consequences if they don't make it right. So it's about communicating effectively with them so that they know these are the expectations. This is what's going to happen if you don't meet them.
Brittany, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so lots of people don't know that.
I did not know that. You're telling me, because I had this gal years ago, and she was blatantly doing things, and I wanted to fire her, and she knew damn well why she was getting fired. She said, what did I do wrong? I said, I'm not going to talk about it. I said, I don't have to. I'm an at-will employer, and I'm not going to stoop down and repeat things that you know what you did, that you blatantly did. I said, I'm not going to tell you, because in Michigan, you're an at-will employee, so goodbye. I don't do that all the time, but with her, I did. You're saying that was illegal.
I'm saying that is how wrongful termination suits are won, is that, yeah, not so much that it's illegal. It's just that there are such things as wrongful termination lawsuits, even in at-will state. And that's how they can be won by the employees who are terminated, is because they were not given due process. And so at-will state, if you have a reason, then you better be able to back it up and show that you gave them the opportunity to improve. Otherwise, there needs to be no reason. At the end of the day, everyone has a reason for doing it. And judges know that and juries know that there is going to be a reason. When I advise my clients, it's not enough to use the at-will doctrine as your reason for letting someone go if you want to reduce your risk, if you want to be able to properly defend a wrongful termination claim, then let's do it the right way. You know, let me help you do this the right way.
Because it could be that you don't tell the person, it goes to court, and you tell court, listen, she was stealing. I didn't want to bring it up to her. I didn't know for sure. Pretty sure she was.
Mm-hmm.
So I let her go. And maybe if you have a reason there, maybe they let that stuff go. But like in general, don't get to the point where you're even there having to explain that to a judge.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. There are definitely severe things like that, like theft, especially in a pharmacy. Theft is going to be one of those things that you do it once and you're gone. Like, we're not going to give you the opportunity to improve your behavior because we consider theft as severe, right? So there are definitely allowances for severe behavior. It's more along the lines of performance where this doctrine is going to come into play a lot more, is someone's just not performing well. What did you do to help them improve? And did they know that they weren't performing well? And did they know what was going to happen if they didn't improve? I tell you what, the biggest thing that I see lacking with leaders, even in the pharmacy setting, everywhere, is a lack of clarity and feedback to their employees. There's a lack of clarity around what their role and responsibility actually is, about what expectations that they have. And even your best employees will sometimes not meet your expectations because they don't know what they are. So communication is huge, right? And a lot of performance issues are going to boil down to a lack of communication. They didn't know that's what you expected because it wasn't communicated to them. And that kind of brings me around to the retention issue with new hires, as I see that is there's some high turnover among new hires. And a lot of it has to do with either the company lets them go because they're not performing well within their probationary period, or that employee ends up quitting before their probationary period is over. And a lot of that boils down to their training. They weren't properly onboarded in the sense of, I just told Susie over here to train Fred, the new hire, and Susie has no idea how to train. She was never trained to be a trainer. And so poor Fred isn't getting trained properly. No wonder he's not performing well, right? And so Fred gets let go because he didn't meet your expectations and you're doing it all over again because Susie doesn't know how to train. It's not Susie's fault. It's your fault as the leader. You know, you have to invest in your employees. If you expect them to do something, you need to invest in them to be able to do it.
You brought up something interesting, probationary period. Does that give you, because I got this gal I'm hiring tomorrow, I think, this young woman. What am I even supposed to call her, Brittany? Oh. Now you're getting me all flustered. I called her a gal and I called her a young woman. I probably just should have said I'm hiring a tech, right?
Yeah, we're in a difficult time.
What can I properly call her? If I'm going to refer to her sex, what can I call her?
At first, it's ask her what she wants to be called, and then you can call her that. Otherwise, I would just refer to her as my employee. I'm hiring a new technician.
Yeah. All the color's gone. All the color's gone in conversations. All right, Brittany.
I'm sorry.
I like probation. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so a probationary period, some people call it an introductory period, but it doesn't take away the at-will nature of the job or anything like that. But what it does is it's just a distinct period of time where the employee is, they know that for whether it's 30, 60, 90 days, 180 days, whatever that period might be, it's like you're under a microscope. Right? So if you call out of work in this period of time, we're probably going to let you go. If you aren't performing well, then probably going to let you go. So it's really just a time period where the new hire knows, like, I need to be on my best behavior. And what's really good about them is if you see red flags during a probationary period, they're going to be a lot worse after. Because people tend to be on their best behavior when they know, like, essentially it's saying you're hired, but you're not staying unless you pass this period. So in a new hire's mind who really wants to work there, I'm going to be on my best behavior and bring my A game, right? So if somebody isn't, that's a telltale sign that they're going to be a lot worse when they pass probation, right?
It's like, don't expect to change your husband. You can train a boyfriend and maybe a fiance, but don't train your husband.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
All right, Brittany, let me think about this. So in theory, something like that could still, I'm talking in theory, something like that could still go to court because you still can't fire them for illegal reasons and so on.
Right.
But I like that probation because if you do have to fire them in 15 days, at least they have kind of a hint where if you don't have that, this person's going to call her grandma up and tell her how happy she is to be working at the store where her grandma worked 50 years ago and stuff like that. I think it lowers the expectation.
I'm not suggesting that if they're not performing well in 30 days, you can them because you need to take a look at again, well, what's going on? Maybe we have an issue. And you always want to give yourself the room to be able to extend a probationary period too, right? So like, let's say our probationary period is 90 days and I have this employee and they do really good, but there's this one area that I'm not sure about and the end of their probation is coming. So you know what? I'm going to extend it another 30, 60 days just to see. But you need to be clear with them about that area as, hey, I really like having you here. There's this area I'm not certain about. Let's talk through that and work through that. And I'll give you another 60 days on your probation. If it's not improved, then you're not going to pass probation and I'm going to have to let you go. It's also a really good reason to give for termination is did not successfully complete probation as the reason for those new hires. But I think it's really more psychological.
It's not like everything was great. And then I got fired. It's like, well, no, you're in the probation period. How do you know it was great? They're still looking at you.
Yeah, yeah.
I know an employee can quit any time. Is it wise to tell the employee that we're both in probationary period, you're looking at us, and we're looking at you with a closer eye? Or is that just lighting the fire? I mean, people know they can quit whenever they want to.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying that. It might make them feel a little better in that, but it's probably not something common that employers say.
They can quit whenever.
They can quit whenever, yeah. It's a common saying during an interview. It's, well, we're interviewing you and you're also deciding whether you like us.
Here's the problem I think that bosses have, Brittany, is it's an imbalance. And I'm not talking legally. I'm just talking, it seems an imbalance of fairness, because employees can come in and they can say, I'm putting in my 2-week notice. And because I don't want to give them any satisfaction, like I need them or anything. So I just say, congratulations. I'm glad you found something that meets your needs more and so on. And all right, we'll go 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. Now, an employee can do that with even an inkling that they want to change. Where we bosses, maybe it's because of conflict, maybe it's because of not wanting to have to hire somebody else, but we typically wait till the employee's like 90% bad. There's 10% good, but we're going to fire them because they're finally 90% bad. But really, we have the right, in fairness, I should be able to say, like, I'm in the store and I'm thinking, Brittany's good, but she's like 49% good, but 51% I don't really like. And it doesn't seem right, but I'm going to call her and say, Brittany, hey, how's it going? Good. You know what, Brittany? I'm just in a mood. I'm at 51% and you're fired. The employee feels like they can do that. But from a boss, it seems like you're the devil if you just throw out a statement like that.
Yeah. And I think that more comes from because when an employee does it, they're the one who is making that life-altering decision. Again, this coming back to our jobs, our livelihood. This is what pays our bills and helps us take care of our families, right? And so when we make that decision, well, most of the time we already have something else lined up. And so we're not cutting into that. Whereas when the employer does it, the employer is taking control of this person's livelihood at that point. So that's the difference in why do employers need to take their employees through due process, or why are there protections for employees? Because you're ultimately affecting their life and they have no control over it at that point. So the rules are there to bring fairness to people who we don't work because we like it. Unfortunately, people aren't in companies because they just decided, I really want to work today. It's because they need to. It's a need, a basic need of theirs to earn a living.
But Brittany, if I've got my bases covered and if I tell them it's a 51% desire on my part versus, you know, 49% yours, it's legal.
Yeah, as long as the 51% doesn't have to do with a protected characteristic, like it's not a legal reason.
I'm not stupid.
Well, I don't want to say yes for sure to your question without that.
All right. So, Brittany, I know we're not supposed to base things on personality. In other words, if you don't like somebody, instead of thinking you don't like them, you say, here's why I don't like them, because they always let this go or they spend too much time here, different things like that. With that said, if you were an employer of a pharmacy, what kind of personality would really get under your skin? But it might be hard to put that into a defensible position of why it bothers you or firing them or so on. What personality would get under your skin that would be hard to deal with? And you kind of have to deal with it because they're not really breaking anything.
Oh, goodness. That's a hard question, Mike.
You've seen hundreds of people that have been fired, and there's got to be a personality that bothers most people or would bother you.
I would say the personality that is the hardest is someone who is always playing the victim, right? Everything is always somebody else's fault, or somebody says something and all of a sudden this is a hostile environment or I'm being harassed. I think that those are the personalities that are hardest to deal with and they just get under your skin, right? Oh, for heaven's sake, it's again, right? And those are probably the ones that most people tend to avoid confronting when there's an issue because they know they're going to be annoyed at this person because they're going to play the victim.
All right, Brittany, I'm going to one-up you. I know I'm not supposed to do that. You don't want to be the one-upper, but I'm going to one-up
you. We'll see.
You be the judge. We had this employee that anytime she was in the back room and had to do something with the order, I think she hated the orders, like checking in stuff. Every time she'd go back there, she'd make this like grunting, like sumo wrestler sigh when she had to pick one of these crates up. These things were like 3 pounds, and she'd act like she was doing a deadlift. Passive aggressive. I'd bring her in the office. I'm like, hey, what's the reason that you'd be breathing that hard when you're picking up something that's 3 pounds? And I know you don't like it. I can just see it on you. And she would say, oh, no, nothing wrong. I like all this stuff. If I did that, it wasn't intentional. It was certainly intentional. But that's a hard one because you can't even talk to the person about it because then they're passive aggressive and it just goes on. Did I win?
You may have won. I'll give you that one, Mike. That's a hard one to deal with because, I mean, what are you going to do? Stop grunting? Like, that's probably not going to happen.
They do just enough to be below the radar because then it makes you feel a little foolish by saying that. Or you're grunting too loud. I'll be play acting for her in the office. Now, I know if I bend down, here's how loud a grunt should be. And this is coming from a guy in his mid-50s. It's a hard one to manage on because it's easy to do a passive aggressiveness with
that. For sure. That one's probably one that you just brush off your shoulder and move on.
I've got to not have any employees anymore.
No employees? How are you going to run your business?
I don't know. I would do something that just didn't have employees. In years past, you had what they called secretaries when they would do all this and that those aren't needed anymore. I would do a one-person show. And I know people are saying, yeah, but Mike, then you can't scale and it's not really a business because you don't have employees that are making you money and all that kind of stuff. I'd be like, so? I don't have employees.
I totally get it. I mean, as I said earlier, you have one employee and you have to follow every federal and state law that applies to you. And there's both federal and state laws, right? Just depending on where you live. So it's hard having employees. Puts an extra layer of challenge to your business.
The whole employee thing of having an employee have some pain in the ass problem, you can hear it in my voice. I shouldn't be talking like that, but that's the truth. And just the whole dealing with the personalities and stuff like that, I imagine maybe not to my degree, but I imagine people that's why they're calling on you too. That maybe is just the toughest, for whatever reason, it's the toughest part of their job and they need a shoulder to cry on, if not anything else.
Oh yeah. Yeah, certainly. And I'm definitely there for my clients when it's, you know what, I just need to vent to you because I am so frustrated by this one employee and that's what they want. They want my ear for that. And that's totally fine. I'm a safe place to do that, right? You can tell me exactly how you feel. I'm not going to report you. I'm going to help you through it. I think that people and managing employees is definitely the most challenging for business owners, pharmacy owners as well. We think about our pharmacy owners who most of them, not all of them, but most of them are pharmacists. We're pharmacists. They didn't get into this industry for people. In the sense of managing people to be a leader, they did it for their patients, for pharmaceuticals. And so they've never been taught or trained how to lead people. And so a lot of our pharmacy owners, they just lack the training and they lack the development themselves and how to be a leader of people. In addition to all of the other aspects of business, the people side isn't the only one that owners struggle with. I mean, the financial side too. I could tell you how many of them probably don't even look at their financial statements. So it's just there's different aspects of the business But that's why people like me and financial consultants and others, that's why we exist, because this is what we do. We are trained and educated and experienced in it. So we're someone who can fill that void for you. You take a pharmacy that has 5-6 employees, you don't have the need to hire a chief HR officer. You don't need to hire an HR manager, but you do need to have someone that you can count on who can write your policies and make sure that you're doing things right and take you through situations that you're not sure how to get through. So you still need someone who has that expertise that you can tap into when you need it. Now, the bigger you get, the more that you need someone on staff to help you, or someone, you know, there more often.
I think you being there for them is sort of that excuse in their mind, in a good way, that, well, Brittany said this was a good idea to do this, and I'm going to have that going through my head as I take this maybe difficult step. Without you behind there, they're looking into their soul to see if it was a good reason or not. And this person starts crying in front of you after you fired them, and you question yourself and things like that. But it's nice to know that Brittany's in the back of the head with that confidence that you gave them to say, this is the right choice.
Yeah, definitely. I have a client who it was really hard for them to manage people, and I've been working with them for more than a year now, and they're doing better and better. She's very vocal about, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do it without you.
Brittany, so a pharmacist just got done listening to this, and lo and behold, you're standing at their back door as they open the door.
Yeah.
You're going to sneak in with them 5 minutes before the store opens. What are you going to do in that 5 minutes to give wisdom to that owner?
That's a tricky, good question, Mike, because I like to give wisdom and advice based on what I know your challenges are, what you're facing. However, I would say in that limited amount of time is to remind them that these are human beings, right? And they're not robots. It's not your Parata machine or your Script Pro machine. They are people, and people have basic needs of security and safety. But beyond that, they have needs to work in an environment that is respectful of them, that is empathetic with what they might be going through in their life, to remind them that this is their livelihood, right? And so we need to be mindful that it is our duty to, not just the owner, but any leader's duty, to enable the employee to perform well and to communicate with them when they're not. And so if we have an employee who has to be let go because they're not performing well, what did we do to help them? Like, what was done on our end? Because we should be doing everything in our power to make them succeed, set them up to succeed. And a lot of times we end up setting them up to fail, not on purpose, but it happens just because we don't take the time to truly plan and to truly communicate.
Brittany, thanks for joining us. That is Down in the Weeds, and we didn't let you get off too far talking about all this cloud ideals. We got down to the, well, pretty much it's my deficiencies in liking people. So thanks for taking that down that road. But it just goes to show that it can get kind of messy. And I think that's the reason why people should consider reaching out to someone like you to share the burden. Two people are working on an issue rather than just spinning in your own mind.
Yeah, absolutely. You might be the owner, but you don't have to be the expert in everything. So bring on the experts in other areas and let us help you.
All right, Brittany, thanks. Keep doing what you're doing and we'll keep in touch.
Thank you. I will.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.